From the KCPW Danker Studios at Library Square, you're listening to Downtown SLC, a show that explores the people, places, and events shaping Utah's urban center. I'm your host, Jason Mathis. Bike share is a concept that has taken downtown by storm. For the third year in a row, we have benefited from the Green Bike Program with dozens of stations scattered throughout the urban core. This year, we hit a milestone, 100,000 rides on the Bike Share program. Joining me today will be Ben Bolte. Ben is the director and founder of the Bike Share program. We'll talk about why public and private sponsors have stepped up to help make it a reality and the impact it's having on air quality, on health and fitness, and on creating an environment downtown that supports our economy and makes us a stronger urban center. After this news from the BBC. Welcome back. You're listening to Downtown SLC on KCPW. I'm your host, Jason Mathis, with the Downtown Alliance. Joining me today is my dear friend, Ben Bolte. Ben is the founder and director of Green Bike, Salt Lake City's nonprofit bike share system. So Green Bike is awesome. Let's just start out with that premise.
Interview done. Thank you, Jason.
That's all we needed to say. We will now turn over to the smooth jazz stylings. Just kidding. No, it's been great. And I've told this story before that I was not always a fan of bike share. I didn't really understand it. And several years ago, you came to the Downtown Alliance from Salt Lake City. You came to our nonprofit, and we had a little bit of money from the city. And out of that, you have built a magnificent bike sharing empire stretching across downtown Salt Lake City. And you guys hit a big milestone in this past week, so I wanted to talk about that. But then I want to get into a little bit of deeper, almost philosophical stuff about why bike share, why it matters, what's the public benefit. So we'll get the news done first, and then we'll talk a little bit more about future plans for Green Bike.
That sounds spectacular. So as far as our program's performance, so far, about 50,000 people have bought nearly 60,000 passes and taken over 168,000 rides.
That's since the program's inception.
That is since the program's inception. So that's 1.3 million miles off the road so far. And that's not just taking cars off the road to reduce traffic congestion. That's also saving money on road maintenance costs.
Right.
Because if you think about a car weighs a couple of tons, right? Bike only weighs 50 pounds.
Right.
And if most of the time people are riding around their cars, it's just one person in that vehicle. We can really save some money that way.
Right.
Then we have air quality, the community health aspect, where we have burned about 19 million calories doing it. But the real milestone so far was this past weekend, we hit 100,000 rides for this season. So 100,000 rides on 200 bikes in 7 months. Now, I know you told me, don't give them so much information because people don't care. I think the people do care, Jason.
On this show,
and
they
I'm
do.
Here to give it to them.
On this show, they do. They really do care. I'm interested in talking about that because 100,000 rides is pretty. That's a pretty impressive statistic. Obviously, there are other larger bike share programs. You know, Washington D.C. has a huge one. New York City has a huge one. But for a city of our size and a bike share program of our size, this is pretty spectacular. Like, this is sort of hitting the ball out of the ballpark in terms of the number of times that the bikes are getting used and the impact it's having on the community.
Yeah, our goal was to hit 66,000 rides this year. Last year, we had about 150 bikes out, and we hit 46,000.
Mm-hmm.
So we're like, well, we want to set, you know, high
a
bar.
Goal.
We don't
yeah.
want to go nuts. But we have already far and away surpassed that goal. And I think it speaks to what we've always said, which is that if you add more stations and bikes, it makes it more convenient.
Mm-hmm.
And greater convenience equals a lot more people willing to use it.
Yeah. One thing I think that you don't always get credit for, though you should. So you're really good about tracking the number of bikes and the trips and the people that use them specifically on a bike share trip. But there are lots of people who are able to take tracks into town or who ride the bus. Because they know that if they want to go to lunch someplace or need to run a quick errand or go shopping, they don't have to have their car. They can just jump on a green bike. I count myself among their number. So I get on tracks every day from my home near the University of Utah, and I ride tracks down. And I know no matter where I go downtown, I can jump on a green bike and go someplace, and I don't have to have a car.
Yeah, it makes it a little easier to make that jump of not taking your car with you that day.
Right.
And that's sort of UTA's big goal, is these first-mile, last-mile solutions, just to make it easier to get to where you're going and get from where you are to the train stop.
Right.
And it just gets more and more effective and convenient the more stations that we add. So it's, you know, it's a toss-up between, like, how much money should be invested in it versus what good comes from it. But in my opinion, it's a no-brainer, and I think we've got the evidence to support that.
Yeah, well, and clearly a lot of happy people who are using it who are not riding around in their cars, which is a great thing, I think, for everybody. How many stations do you have this year? How does that compare to the first year when you launched? Give us a little bit of a history of
sure.
the growth trajectory
sure. so,
over the past
so
3 years.
So we launched with 10 stations in 2013, and we had about 55 bikes out in the street. We did a little expansion later in the year, and then in 2014, we went to 20 stations mm-hmm. with about 150 bikes, and then this year, we went from 20 to 25 stations and 150 bikes to a little over 200 bikes. We expanded some of the existing stations along the way, but new stations and new bikes is really the big way for people to experience the system.
That's the way that it's grown, is just by
yeah.
adding new stations in more convenient locations so
correct.
That people, it's easy to get. This is a question that I get a lot. I've seen it on Facebook. People ask me about it. When is it coming to my community? How come it's not in Sugar House? How come it's not at the University of Utah? How come it's not in Provo or Ogden or Orem? That it's so successful, when is it coming to my community?
Well, the reality is that this is not a profit-driven business. This is a community-driven transportation
it's a community
service.
Benefit.
Right. And so as a result, it doesn't make enough money to pay for its own expansion, and that requires public investment.
Right.
It basically expands when people are willing to fund it. And I think our goal is to prove that the existing system is worth the investment and is an effective use of that public dollar. And to be honest, so far I think that investing in bike share is just being a good steward of the public dollar because it attacks a variety of public policy issues, everything from cardiovascular health to air quality. I've had a lot of people come up to me and say that we don't stress the economic development component a lot. Some people that are willing to move downtown mm-hmm. and move into apartments and condos where normally maybe they wouldn't have. And we've got some really good data to support that.
I know the Downtown Alliance has seen that. So, you know, a fantastic new restaurant, Current, that opened up. Joe LaSalle, the proprietor, has been a guest on this show, and one of the things that they really wanted when they were developing that was a green bike station, an apartment building built by Wasatch Commercial on, I believe, 4th East, in between 1st and 2nd South. They wanted to have a green bike station. Certainly the development that's happening at Pioneer Park, they're interested in supporting green bike, and it's interesting to see how green bike impacts the system of downtown, of residential development, of retail development, restaurant development, commercial development, because it's become, I think, kind of an integral part. In fact, and you'll know this, we've had a lot of people call us, developers who are doing projects in other places throughout Salt Lake County, saying we really want to have a green bike, you know, system mm-hmm. in our development. And we're like, great, it costs money to do that, but
right.
there's nothing wrong with doing it now. That would be great. You just have to pay for it.
Right, and then we're just trying to make sure that we grow in the most effective and intelligent way possible so that we don't just put an isolated couple of stations in Sugar House that can't then be supported by the rest of the system.
Right.
So what we have to do, unlike a lot of cities, is we actually cover all of the operating expenses on our own as a private nonprofit,
mm-hmm.
whereas if you look at D.C. or Boston or some of these larger systems, they have a for-profit operator come in, and there's just a pay-for-service contract. So if they don't cover all of their operating expenses, the city is then on the hook. Now, we don't have that here, and honestly, it's a much harder operation out here because we have less people mm-hmm. and less employment and population density. But we think it's worth having because, honestly, we have one of the worst air quality problems in the country. And
right.
everybody argues about how much comes from industry and point sources, but nobody disagrees that the largest single contributor is the car, about
yeah.
55%. And Salt Lake City had made an investment because they know these things and we need to do something about it.
Yeah, if you can get people out of their cars, it's going to improve the air quality for everyone. Whether you drive or not, your air quality will be improved by fewer people driving.
Right. Whether you use green bike or not, the program benefits you for all those reasons that we just mentioned.
Yeah. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue talking with Ben Bolte. Ben runs the Green Bike Program, nonprofit bike share program in downtown Salt Lake City. We're talking about the benefits of Green Bike for the public. We're talking about the future of the system, why it's making sense, and the impact it's having on downtown's economy. We will be back after these messages. We're back. You're listening to Downtown SLC on KCPW. We're talking today with my friend Ben Bolte. Ben and I have known each other for about 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Ben and I were introduced when he came to the Downtown Alliance.
It was actually at a cotillion event, if you recall correctly. I asked
event.
You to dance.
It
you
was
said
not a cotillion
no,
event.
But I continued to pursue.
You've been an ardent admirer for many, many years. Ben came to the Downtown Alliance through Salt Lake City through a grant that we received from Salt Lake City to start a bike share program. We at the time didn't know what it would grow into. We just knew that it was a cool idea. Through Ben's passion and dedication and hard work, it has grown to be one of the most successful bike share programs, particularly of its size, anywhere in North America. It's a really great program for our downtown. So we talked a little bit about successes. How do you measure success? How do you know that the program's been successful?
So everybody in our organization has different metrics that are applied to them. Personally, I have four that really dictate if I feel I've been successful in my role. One is the size of the program. Mm-hmm. So that's the number of docks, available bikes on the street, and pay stations that we started with, that we hit every year, and then where we hope to be. Another one is how much ridership, so how many rides actually take place. Another one is how many dollars did we generate from ridership revenue,
mm-hmm.
so how much money was brought in from people paying to use it. And then the fourth metric, I'm having a Governor Rick Perry moment right now with
That's the fourth one. I'll tell you some of mine. So I think maybe what we ought to do, let me tell you one thing that I think is valuable for people to understand, too, is that it's paid for. You have three funding sources. You have public money, which has mostly come from the RDA, the Redevelopment Agency, helping to encourage economic development.
Correct.
You have private money, which has mostly come from corporate sponsors and nonprofit sponsors who believe in the program and are willing to invest their corporate dollars to help make the program successful. Select Health is the title sponsor, but you have probably 20 other corporate sponsors
who all contribute.
And then the user fees that you generate, and each of those contributes to help pay not just for the capital cost, but for the operations of the program.
Right. The public dollars pay for the equipment,
right.
the infrastructure, and the private dollars cover the quote-unquote operational losses, because we essentially charge far, far less than what we would need to recoup our operating costs.
Right.
But that's because we're trying to make it easier for
easier
people to
cheaper.
Use the system.
Yeah.
Right.
We should lower
the barrier to entry on that.
We should explain, Ben, to people who may not have ever used the system how it works. I think, you know, we spent a lot of time doing that when it first started. Now I think
sure.
you and I both assume that everyone knows how it works because we use it so frequently.
I know that nobody knows.
Well,
no,
some people don't know
those
how it
50,000
works.
People that used it know.
That's right.
Well, the idea is that you pay for access instead of having one specific bike that you rent for 24 hours, because we know that if you rent a bike for 24 hours, you're not riding it for 24 hours.
Right.
You're actually riding for about an hour or two, and the rest of the time it's locked up somewhere and nobody can use it. So with a bike share system, you just pay a small access fee. For us, it's $5 for 24-hour access, and you can take as many 30-minute rides as you want for those 24 hours.
You just have to take it out of one dock and
yeah.
lock it into
put it in the same dock.
Dock,
put it in a different dock, put
yeah.
it at a different station, and every time you do that, your time resets. Now,
right.
you can also, if you're downtown a lot, pay $75 and take as many one-hour trips as you want for a year.
Yeah.
You'll also throw in a helmet and this card that lets you skip the kiosk and all sorts of other great stuff, but that's only 27 cents a day. And we also have an office pass program where you can get annual passes for as little as $25, which is only 9 cents a day.
9 cents a day to have unlimited use of a bike downtown seems like a good deal.
Right, and you don't worry about your bike getting stolen, or a lot of these downtown apartments that are being built, not exactly spacious.
Right.
So if you don't want to have a bike in your apartment, now you don't have to.
Right, you can just take the green bike. It's not haphazard where you put the locations. You put them by Harmon's because we know that sometimes people like to do a little grocery shopping, whether they're coming from their residence or their office.
You try and create a nice ecosystem. So all the major employment centers downtown, we have major transit destinations, apartments, and then spots for entertainment,
mm-hmm.
nightlife. And that collected mixed use really allows the bikes to be used as often as humanly possible. So far, just this year in 7 months, each bike has been used over 500 times.
That's pretty incredible. That's very cool.
Yeah. So I think if you are smart in your planning and your implementation, you can create an infrastructure and ecosystem that really benefits everybody.
Right. And if you are an annual member, you can track this. The first year, I was very competitive about this and wanted to be on the leaderboard and wanted to be one of the top users. And I just use it because it's convenient and easy. But
Can opt in to our leaderboard. So we know how often everybody's used everything.
And how many calories you burn.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
How many emissions you haven't put into the
Correct.
Atmosphere.
But annual members can look up online and see for themselves how many they've burned. And if they want to, they can put that on a leaderboard so everybody can see and you can compete. The average annual member uses the program about 44 to 46 times a year, mm-hmm. and the average 24-hour user about a little over two times a year.
Two times a year. I wanted to talk, so you've mentioned a couple times public investment. I want to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about that. It's not just the city, it's the state as well, but why does the public choose to invest in a program like this, and how much money have they invested over the last 3 years?
So far, about $1.2 million of public funding has been invested into the Green Bike program.
What percentage is that of the total amount that's been invested into the program?
About 50%.
Okay.
So the majority of it, 51% has come from the private sector for all the monies that we've ever received or has been committed to us. Mm-hmm. And then Green Bike is essentially a charity acting like a transit agency with the expectations of a profitable business. And this is kind of a tough tightrope to walk. But the idea is that no one will ever get rich working at Green Bike, no matter how successful we are.
Sorry, Ben.
Yeah, it will never be publicly traded, but that's a good thing. If a company is only concerned with profits, it doesn't do what's best for the community.
Right. It does what's best for the company.
Right. And our goals aren't making money. Our goals are air quality, cardiovascular health, making our public transportation infrastructure easier to use, getting more cyclists on the road, more female cyclists, economic development. And then just being a good community partner and making the place that we all live. Everybody at Green Bike is from Salt Lake,
right.
Lives in Salt Lake, and we want to make our community better.
Yeah. You guys have lots of annual members. I know there was a big spike in the number of annual members this year.
Yeah, we have about 1,000 right now.
So
I'm hoping we can
people.
Get maybe 1,200, 1,300 next year.
Yeah, that growth isn't just sort of a steady line going up. It's very much...
No, you have to go out and work for them.
Yeah, but it's exponential. Like you started the first year with only a few hundred, and then the next year, 300 or 400. This year, 1,000. And this is something that you helped me understand because it's not a typical concept. It's not the usual business model. Having more stations with more density, with more convenience, actually creates a stronger system. And that, of course, makes sense, but that's a reason why it's focused in the downtown area where you do have a lot of dense populations, why it might not make sense in a typical residential neighborhood or even in a commercial neighborhood that didn't have the density of employees and retail and restaurants and things that you have in a downtown.
There are some things that you need at just a basic level before you do anything. One, you need to have some pretty solid bike infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You don't need to have bike lanes on every area, but it needs to feel pretty safe and people need to be able to get directly from point A to point B without having a ton of bike experience. You also need to have some pretty decent topography, which just means there can't be a lot of hills. And then you need to have a lot of mixed use, dense centers. So employment centers, entertainment destinations, transit destinations, and there needs to be that mix because there are certain types of users that'll use it in the morning, others in the middle of the afternoon,
right.
And others in the evening. The whole idea is how can we get the maximum amount of use out of this system? If we're going to invest money in it, let's make it the most effective and the most utilized system it can possibly be.
Yeah. Where do you want to be in 5 years?
Okay, so 5 years, I would like to have 100 stations downtown, 50 stations at the University of Utah, 50 stations in Ogden, 30 to 50 stations in Provo. I think that would be a solid watermark to shoot for.
So it's not, that's one thing that I think is important for people to know, that downtown was really the pilot for this. It's been incredibly successful downtown, but you have larger aspirations. I mean, really, this should be a regional transportation system that's linked in with tracks, linked in with Front Runner,
yeah,
highly coordinated with UTA.
We've always looked at this from what is going to be the most effective use,
mm-hmm.
what's going to do the most good. And the most good is creating this sort of regional network in these different hubs where we can eliminate the most car trips.
Right.
So a lot of people that work in Salt Lake City, I know this will be a shock to you, a lot of people that work downtown don't necessarily live downtown.
No, I know that. Not that many people live downtown. We have 70,000 people who come downtown
every
day to
work. Right, but they come down and they utilize the services and they go to the restaurants and then they work here. And we know that we can't keep building more and more freeways. Like, they're incredibly expensive to maintain, to build, and all of the science says that we can't build our way out of this. So we need to add things like the front runner system and rail lines.
Right.
And then we can get more people to participate in that if there are these connections immediately after, because rail isn't going to get you right in front of your work for most people.
Right.
It's not that nimble. It's pretty static.
It'll get you within a mile maybe of where you work.
Right.
But you got to make that last mile connection. Yeah.
And so I think those long-term partnerships are really the future, and the way that we're going to be able to save a lot of money as the taxpayer and hopefully live in an area where we don't eventually have to wear a mask.
Yeah. So I want to just remind people, if they would like more information, where to go. And also I want to say, I'm not a good biker. Like, there's some people in our community who love bikes and they're always biking and they are on bikes all the time.
Yeah, Green Bike's not for them.
That's not me. Yeah, but Green Bike is so easy to ride. It's incredibly stable. It's built in a way that you can ride it in a suit or a skirt. You can ride it if you're a little paunchier, as I am. You can ride it. It's
for everyone.
It's a bike program for the common man. You don't have to wear Lycra to ride Green Bike.
We would actually encourage you not to wear Lycra. That's just my personal taste.
So
though.
Hurtful. Hurtful for you to tell me that.
I know.
So tell people where to go.
They can go to greenbikeslc.org, or they can go to any social media platform and just search SLC Bike Share, and we will be more than happy to help you out and talk to you and do anything we can.
And a quick note of thanks to the sponsors. Who are the sponsors that you would
like to acknowledge? Well, first and foremost, I want to thank Select Health. They came on board day one and have been the most fantastic partner as our title and basket sponsor. And then we have just a myriad station sponsors, Fidelity Investments, the Union Pacific Railroad, the Tour of Utah, Sheraton, Wasatch Property Management, Third and Third Uncommons, Radisson, Travel Wise. We could be here a while if I go through all these.
But that's great. It's great to see the community.
And then the
rally.
City and the regional council for seeing, like, we were not the first. There were about three or four cities that had these programs when we really started building up some steam towards getting ours going. And now there are about 70, 75 in the country, and every city's kind of figuring out, oh my gosh, we need to do this.
Yeah.
And they are investing real, real money into it because it's changing behavior, and that's really the goal.
Yeah. Ben, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Downtown SLC on KCPW. You can join us every Thursday at 10 a.m., where we explore the people, places, and events shaping Utah's urban center.